Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
David Baldacci is a frequent guest on this program. We love when he stops by. A lawyer turned novelist, he is best known for his best-selling page turners. Since the 1996 publication of his debut novel, Absolute Power, he's published 27 books for adults, plus three for young readers. His latest is the YA novel, The Finisher. In the book, we meet Vega Jane. We're also introduced to Baldacci's mythical world of Wormwood, where townsfolk known as Wugmorts live in constant fear of the dense and mysterious quag that surrounds them. To learn more about the new novel and to welcome back a good friend to the program, David Baldacci, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Nice to have you aboard. How long has this been percolating of something that you wanted to do?
I read fantasy as a kid, and it was nice because kids have an unfettered imagination, and fantasy sort of, feed right into that. And this book started about over 5 years ago on Christmas Day in 2008. My wife gave me a journal as a present, and you never want to do that on a holiday with a writer because he's going to, run off and start writing, and that's what I did. And I wrote the name Vega Jane down and really didn't have an idea of what I wanted to do after that. But 5 years later, after a lot of work, the book was done.
What was there? Do you know where that name came from, Vega Jane, of what?
Vega is, astronomically speaking, it's the most researched star in the heavens. It's like the fifth brightest star in the sky. And I've always liked it as a name. And Jane is a very British name. And the book is, if you didn't know that I had written it, might have thought that a Brit had written the book. It's a very well-known, famous last name, surname in Britain. So, it flowed well. I just like the sound of it. Sometimes it's all you need, Vega Jane. And she was my heroine, and it just all started with her.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you've written for young readers before. Is there any sort of difference in the writing? The book is rather universal for kids or adults. But for you, is there anything that you have to do consciously to adapt?
Well, there's some subject matters you have to sort of tread lightly around, and some language issues as well for younger readers. But as far as plot and character development and just twists and turns and just the prose you need to sort of describe everything, you really have to bring your A game. I didn't ever intend to write down to readers, to young readers, because kids are way too smart these days. So you really have to bring your best if you want to keep them enthralled and stay with reading the story.
And then, so when did the fantasy part start to come in of really creating another world, of something that you were creating all of the rules and the characters, and that was something that was going to be all yours?
Yeah, I had envisioned this place that was totally isolated, and I was trying to analogize it to, us. And a lot of people believe that we're the only life in the universe. There's billions of planets out there, but we're the only one. There's nothing else other than that. And in Wormwood, which historically and mythologically speaking was supposed to be a star that had crashed into the Earth thousands of years ago and killed a lot of people and animals, and it's always been associated with bitterness. So Wormwood is a place where it's not a dystopian story. They're free, and they have lives. They live in peace and freedom with not much luxury. But Wormwood is all there is, as far as they know. That's what they've been told. There's Wormwood and the quag around it, and the quag is a dangerous beast. You don't want to go into the quag, and there's no point because there's nothing on the other side of the quag. This is all there is. And it's kind of like us saying, we're all there is. But at the same time, Vega Jane's friend leaves Wormwood. No one's ever done that before. And he leaves behind for her a map that seems to be a map through the quag. And that strikes her as being odd because that means that maybe there's something on the other side of the quag, which is something they've always been told did not exist. And at first, she can't leave. She has a brother. She has parents. But those ties are severed through the course of the story, and she makes a decision to leave and discover the truth about not just her, but about everything, because she comes to realize that everything she thought was her life was actually a lie.
As I mentioned, this is a world that you have created, and yet you did a great deal of research. What was that research like? What subjects did you want to have a better grasp on?
Well, mythology, classic fantasy literature, religion, historical foundation, in language. So those were, as you read throughout the book, I have like these little Easter egg nuggets of allusions to other classical fantasy works and authors. There's a character in the book called Dodgson. He was a member of the Council in Wormwood, and Charles Dodgson was Lewis Carroll's real name, and he had one of his best friends in the world was named Duck. There's allusions to Tolkien, allusions to C.S. Lewis, and other works in the book. And mythologically speaking, a lot of the creatures that are in the book are either drawn from mythology, or I've sort of cobbled together different creatures and made them my own, or slightly changed the names of them. Sancius is the head of the council. A real-life figure, Sancius, was a Roman cleric in 300 A.D. who used the Book of Revelation as sort of the centerpiece for his sermons and preachings. So I drew on a lot of different subject areas to... I didn't want to tell just an exciting story that kids would love. I also wanted to sort of, you know, imbue it with meaning and something deeper that they might want to explore. Youth is always supposed to be about learning and exploring and growing, but also challenging and questioning things and, you know, not accepting the status quo as the only thing that should be.
Because the book seems very much grounded in legend and folklore.
Grounded in...
In legend and folklore.
Oh, absolutely. And those, you know, classical fantasy literature draws upon that predominantly. And I was no exception when I sat down to write this, because there's so many truths that come from fables and parables and legends. It's almost like where there's smoke, there's bound to be some element of fire. And those are lessons that those are really oral histories that have been passed down from generation to generation, and all of them have elements and truth into it, and they all have meaning and things that, you know, even in 2014 we can learn from.
So tell us a little bit about Vega Jane, in the sense of she is telling us the story. It's told in the first person. Talk a little bit about that being, I assume that was different for you. Most of your novels are not told in that voice. And then, of course, that voice being a teenage girl.
Yeah, the point of view, first person, was different for me. And I think I made that decision because when you build a world, you have a lot of information you need to convey. And if you're this third-person point of view, omniscient narrator, you tend to have these info dumps where you'll go page after page after page explaining things. So I really wanted to see things through the eyes of Vega Jane, who was very familiar with her world, and would give the reader little bits of information as she saw fit, as she saw things, observed things. So there was never these page after page or chapter-long information dumps where you're kind of like just the story just gets bogged down. And also, I wanted you to really get into Vega's head, and really the only way to do that is to do it through her eyes, through her first-person voice, to really get you wedded to her and to get to understand where she's coming from, because she's in every scene in the book, and she's really driving the narrative, so you have to sort of be on her shoulder and along for the ride. And I could have approached this book a couple of different ways. You can write fantasy by taking this huge world with lots of elements and facets to it and explore it superficially all across the spectrum. Or you can take a very small world and explore it in depth, and I chose the latter. So Wormwood is a very small village. There's very few elements to it. There are a number of main characters in the book, but there's not an overwhelming number. I don't, you know, fly you around all different places, and you're meeting new locations, new settings, new people. It's just sort of like this stage set on a play, like a play. And here's what it is. And I explore all the settings and the characters and what goes on in great detail. Because I think it just leaves a firmer impression on people as they go forward in the story.
She has a rough life. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of baggage with her parents. And she has her issues. She says things that she probably shouldn't. But she stands up for herself.
Yeah. And again, you know, all about growing up is making a lot of mistakes, but picking yourself back up and standing up for what you believe in. Young people have a hard time acknowledging mistakes, and, you know, the idea of a 14-year-old girl, I raised one, you know, she's in college now, but I went through those years and those challenges, and as a parent, obviously it's a slightly different perspective, but you still learn a lot about what your kid is thinking and where they're coming from. But that age is a very difficult age because a lot of changes are taking place both outside and inside of you. And it's hard sometimes to adapt and hard to really believe you have a place somewhere. Because I think at the end of the day, Vega Jane is just wondering where she fits into all of this and why doesn't anything that she was told was the truth actually make sense.
The novel is somewhat open-ended, assuming that there will be more. There is more to this story.
Yes, they're going to be, there's a sequel. It's probably at least four books in this that I have sort of plotted out in my head. She's got quite a bit of journey ahead of her. And unlike pretty much every other, you know, series of books like this, you haven't met everything yet. You haven't, you know, in other books, whether it be The Hunger Games or Harry Potter, which are great series, you sort of know what the main adversary is. You sort of know what the big plot is, the battle between good and evil. In The Finisher, you really haven't even met those elements yet.
The name of the novel is The Finisher. It is published by Scholastic Press. David Baldacci, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with the new series, and thanks very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Again, David Baldacci's latest is The Finisher. It is published by Scholastic. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.